We're talking with Dr. Robert Fraley from Monsanto. And Dr. Fraley, you were relating back to basically the 1996 with the establishment of the first GMO commercially available to agricultural producers. Come quite a way since 1996 over these last 20 years.
Yeah, I made a note to the group today. This is actually the 20th anniversary of the first GMO products that were launched commercially, Roundup Ready Soybeans, which was a product that I helped invent way back. You know, so my background is I grew up on a small farm in Illinois, went to college, had a chance to work in the biotechnology industry out here in California, actually at UCSF, University of California, San Francisco. I joined Monsanto in 1981, worked with a small team of scientists, and we were the first in the world to develop the methods for creating a GMO crop, to introduce a gene into a corn or soybean plant. And then it took us about 15 years of studies and development before we launched those products in 1996. And, it's incredible. I mean, I look back at that point in time and I have kind of two thoughts. One is I would have never predicted in 1981 when we were first starting that, the products that we created would be the most rapidly adopted tool in the history of agriculture. You know, GMO crops are now grown in over 30 countries around the world. They're grown on, 400 plus million acres, which is about a quarter of the world's farmland. Here in the U.S., 90% of our corn, our soybeans, our cotton, our sugar beet, our canola are based on the technology. That's been spectacular. But I wouldn't have guessed back in 1981 that here we would be today still talking about GMOs and GMO acceptance and are they safe and, the myriad of issues and myths that are associated with the technology. And, as we were talking earlier and I talked to the group, I mean, my big regret in all of this is, back in the 90s when we launched the products, we were excited. We'd done all the regulatory approvals, to launch a GMO in the U.S., you need EPA, FDA, and USDA approval. But because U.S. grains are shipped around the world, we also go through the regulatory review process with, up to 70 countries. And so we kind of thought we'd done our work and we, spent our time, talking to our customers, the farmers and the producers. And what we missed was the communication to the public. And, obviously since the 90s, a lot has changed in terms of how the public gets their information, and social media became the thing. And, frankly, it was pretty easy for folks who don't like GMOs or don't like production agriculture or don't like Monsanto to raise issues and create stories and myths about the technology. And, that was our mistake. So about 3 or 4 years ago, I think we realized that our approach to communication needed to change dramatically, that we were responsible to communicate to the public, and that's what we've been doing ever since. And that really means very complete transparency with the public. We've published thousands and thousands of scientific papers about the products. We've opened up channels of communications on websites and chat rooms. Personally, I'm very involved with social media, with Twitter. I do debates. I do lots of conversations, with different organizations and different groups and lots of consumer groups. And what I find is that consumers have a huge interest in food and food security and how their food's produced. And frankly, I think it's our responsibility to communicate that. I mentioned to all the producers and growers and ranchers out here today is, in agriculture today, less than 1% of the U.S. population is involved in farming and food production. We have the responsibility to reach out to that other 99% that lives in the cities, that's not involved in farming, and really communicate, the passion that we have for producing safe food, the passion that we all have for, preserving the land that, we've grown up on or lived on. And that's the connection I think we need to make with the consumer. And I think we have a tremendous opportunity to do that and a huge interest to achieve it.
Obviously, a lot of work to be done. I noticed just the other day, going not to a specialty natural whole food type food store, but to a mainline store, and rare, prominently one of the best known peanut butter brands, GMO and gluten free. So there's a lot of work to be done.
There's a lot of work to be done, and frankly, you know, there's a lot of silliness to avoid. I mean, and that's a great example because there aren't GMO peanuts, so it's a marketing thing. You know, I remember 20 years ago in the food industry when the fad was to label everything as cholesterol free. And, you could see everything from cholesterol-free bananas that never had cholesterol. And, today, I was just in a deli in New York last week, and I saw a label on a GMO-free banana and a GMO-free water bottle, which is obviously, it's just marketing. And I think so, that's one of the reasons, that as a company, in a society, I think the food labeling discussions that are going on today, whether it's the voluntary labeling systems that you see with, the organic label or the non-GMO project, or, companies, in the cereal industry or the Campbell Soup announcements to voluntary label. I mean, voluntary labeling is the way to go. I mean, obviously, it needs to be accurate and science-based and not confuse or scare the consumer. And I think that's that's clearly a consumer interest. And as a company, we support those kind of approaches.
Let's look at the future. I know that you alluded to the fact that literally we're seeing finally those original Roundup Ready soybeans of 1996. They're going to be pretty well out of production at some point soon, and you're into multiple more generations. Where are we going with all the technology available to us to feed the world?
Well, first of all, thanks for marking that milestone. The first project I worked on in Monsanto was creating Roundup Ready soybeans, and now we're replacing it with a better product, which is called Roundup Ready Extend. So we're just in the final phases of getting some key approvals for market launch. We expect to launch later this year with Roundup Ready Extend in both soybeans and cottons, and that's going to continue to give farmers very effective, very economical systems to control weeds and crops. And I always like to make the point when we talk about controlling weeds and controlling insects, particularly to a broad public audience, the reason this is so important is because when you look at crop production around the world, crop losses, food waste in the field occurs because of insect damage or competition for weeds. So bringing better tools to help farmers protect their crops against losses to insects and, weeds is key. And the weed control technology has the double benefit of improving the environment. When I was a kid coming home from high school and grade school in the fall, I'd get on my dad's tractor and I'd start plowing the fields. And we'd be turning over the dirt. And a big reason we did that was to control weeds, for the next year's crop. But we didn't realize that when we were, creating that those black soils in Illinois, that we were creating erosion to wind and water, and we were, through the tillage practice, reducing the viability of our soils. With the Roundup Ready technology, we don't have to plow, we don't have to till, we reduce erosion, we reduce moisture loss, and we improve soil health. So these technologies have helped farmers enormously to, improve soil health and preserve the environment. And in the future, we're going to continue to do even more of those. We have next generation technologies coming in corn and soybeans to help give farmers even more tools to control their major challenges with bugs and weeds, but also to help provide protection against diseases, against drought, and some of the stresses that farmers faces. And I think that's important as we look in the future, because we know the challenge for food production is an enormous one. I went through a little bit of the background on that with the group this morning. World population will continue to grow and expand, particularly in Africa. By 2050, we'll have 10 billion people. If you say 2050 really fast, it seems like it's a long, long way away. It's 34 years. I looked at the kids in the audience, some of the students who were here, and the point is, by the time they're my age, the the tools we support using in farming and food production and the impact and the results will all play out. And so these are important discussions today to enable the kind of future that we all want to live in. And I frankly, all of us in the end want to live in a food secure world where we have food affordability and choice for everybody on the planet. But we also know that we need to change the way we farm. You know, I can remember, you know, my grandpa talking about farming with horses and tillage and how it's changed to today. And the importance is we will continue to need to change farming and food production to meet that challenge of doubling the food supply in the future. And that's why the discussion around innovations in agriculture and food production are so important. And we need to reach out to consumers who aren't involved with that, who maybe have a distant memory of what farming was like with a relative or a grandpa or an aunt and uncle, and just talk about how it's changed, how it's improved, and how it's going to continue to do that in the future.
Last question, and this is kind of a what-if question, kind of looking back at what has happened with Monsanto, kind of in this very sweet spot of your Roundup Ready seed business. And it was predicated on that herbicide Roundup, and a lot of folks have described that as a very unique molecule, very unique superstar, if you want to call it that, as far as chemicals are concerned, one that we may never see anything quite that unique again. How important was the fact that you had that good of a herbicide to go with the technology that you were putting together?
Well, you know, Roundup has been a truly spectacular product. You know, as you pointed out, it was first launched in the 70s. It's been used for agricultural production around the world. And the Roundup Ready crop technology that allowed Roundup to be now used, production of corn or soybean or cotton or canola or sugar beets has enabled farmers to have, much more economical weed control, to control other weeds, to avoid the tillage practices that can weaken the soils or create erosion. I think it's been a huge benefit to farmers around the world. And as we think about those next generation products, they add to and I think help support and sustain the Roundup system. You know, what's key now is, we want to avoid as much as we can the challenges that come from, just using a single product like Roundup, because we know nature will respond and, we are seeing a few resistant weeds out there to Roundup. We know that, farmers need to use combinations of products in order to have, multiple products to control their weeds. And so, with the Xtend system, we're taking another product, dicamba, that's also had a long history of safe use, and combining that with Roundup so that those two modes of action can help farmers, control their weeds. And in our research pipelines, as we think about the future, we're working with other companies to develop other combinations of weed control products and traits to give farmers, both the opportunity for better weed control systems, more durable weed control systems, because the one thing we know is as we look at farming around the world, and, frankly, anybody who, like me, who's a home gardener, knows, the challenges of growing a crop, whether it's a corn crop or the tomatoes in my garden, and keeping it weed-free and bug-free during the growing season is a real challenge. And, we see these tools as essential to helping, maintain the increase in productivity that we need, to achieve food security for the planet.